There was a wonderful question here, a number of them, which I really loved. Body sensing for groups with amputees. Now, this is why I like our special interest groups, where you could get into a special interest group with other people who are knowledgeable, or go onto the Yahoo group and post a question like this. Because one of the things we've discovered doing IRES with amputees is you want them to feel the missing limb. You want them to sense it. And as they sense it, which a lot of their medical practitioners and friends and everybody have been trying to convince them away from, and the more they deny the loss of the limb and the sensation that they are feeling that still remains, the more they have phantom limb pain and other experiences with it. But what we found is the more they sense the limb, the more they disidentify from the pain and the discomfort. In other words, they incorporate it in. And there's this wonderful, if you've never seen it, there's a wonderful study done by this Indian doctor who took a mirror and put it where the missing limb was and then put the other arm that's there, so you got a mirror image. So the reflection here made them see as if they had their limb again. And as he had them basically contemplate and meditate on the limb that they were now seeing, their pain went away. So, and Matthew Sanford, some of you may know, I can't remember Matthew's book, but you could Google him. Here's a guy who had a car accident when I think he was waking. He's a friend, and he was in a car accident, and he's a paraplegic. And he does a lot of work with yoga and really waking up the energy body where the limb theoretically has no feeling. And they're studying him because he's demonstrating experiences in his body that he should not be experiencing. And kind of, again, blowing the doctor's minds. So it's a good example of why I think special interest groups are important, where we can look at these different populations, amputees. We're about to do a study that I hope we get. We don't know if we're going to, but with a new skin that they grow for burn patients, and then we theoretically would be brought in to help them deal with the stress while they're going through the grafts. And I hope the staff, because as a person working with burn people, you're causing pain and there's no way not to, and the family. So it'd be neat if we could hopefully... Alice over there is going to be involved in that if we can get it at Brooke Army Medical Center. So there's some fun things. So I think, not fun, it's not fun, but interesting things. So the special interest groups are very important as I see long term, where we can get into these kind of dialogues.
This is a little off the subject, but I just wanted to remind you, Richard, to speak to what we suggested earlier in the week, that when you feel something in your body as you're sitting with the other, to really test that out and see, you know, I'm feeling this. Were you feeling that? And maybe you want to speak a little bit to that, that this has been a practice area for that, but that we don't do that.
You don't do that in your dyad with the people that you're working with. Do that with a peer so that you're increasing your resonance. And I hope eventually we're going to put on some advanced workshops, and John Prendergast and myself have taught before a workshop where we're working with this phenomena of presence and resonance, and we spend a whole weekend just honed in on that in dyads. But when you're in a dyad with a person you're working with, I don't tell them what my experience is. It would be very, very, very rare to do that. I just keep it as a general question. If I'm noting a resonance in my body, I'm just holding it in my bracketing it, and just seeing if it's possible it might emerge. But I'm also wondering whether it just might be here, or I might say, as I've said before, could you mind if I ask you a question? Could you stop for a moment and just see, as you're feeling or talking about what you're talking about, is there anything else here that is calling your attention? And then invariably they might say, yeah, my throat is really stuck. And my throat was feeling very stuck. So, but I wouldn't tell a person, you know, as I'm sitting with them, you know, as I'm sitting with you, I can feel my whole stomach shutting down and getting into a knot. Is yours shutting down and getting into a knot? Because what if they say, no? You've just backed yourself into a corner that I don't think you want to be there in that corner. So be careful on how you bring whatever you're holding here into the room.
Could you define entraining?
Entraining for me is that you are a particular resonance as a personality. And you bring into the room all that you are. And so say you come into the room with joy. That's like a resonance. And I'll start to feel that resonance. And I'll, in a way, it'll resonate in me where I feel joy in my body or my ability to feel joy. And then we'll have an attunement, an entrainment, where we come into together. It's like two trains that are going at different speeds slowly coming, and now they're parallel and they're entrained. And we do know that if you're sitting in a quality of pure being and someone comes in the room and they start sitting with you and they're not in being and they're kind of all chaotic, one of two things may be happening. One is you'll start to feel more and more chaotic. And they might start to feel more and more of your well-being. And your ability to be with chaos and not be disturbed by it and to remain in well-being will allow them to weather their chaos and meet the well-being and entrain into that. So entrainment is just a part of our being together as two human beings. And now they've shown what happens in the brain through MRI scans. And they've actually shown the entrainment that's taking place in the brain, in the neurological system.
Could you speak to the word meditation? I know in describing eye rest or talking about it as a meditative practice, many people just shut down the minute they hear the word meditation. So just some ideas about relanguaging that.
Meditation, contemplation, self-inquiry, getting to know yourself. What are some other words? Those are the ones that I use. Mindfulness, learning to be mindful, coming into a deep sense of well-being that you feel no matter what the circumstance or situation is. Sense of deep peace. Unbreakable, undisturbable meditation is teaching us a sense of, that we wouldn't use the word meditation, but coming into a deep sense of inner peace. Anybody else have a word? It's attentive training. It's helping improve focus and one-pointedness and concentration. But meditation alone isn't concentration. Concentration would be an early stage where if our mind is just bouncing all over the place, we can't really hone in. So that first stage, there's a mindfulness for training the mind to be focused and one-pointed for periods of time. And then meditation begins to take off. In the view of kind of yoga nidra and the map of meditation. Meditation really begins when you have enough facility of free attention that it's no longer bound up in the different distractions, and now it's available for that turn back into self. That would be the beginning, we would say, of meditation. Up until then, it's like mindfulness, concentration, but it's all part of the same frame. I like the word self-inquiry, but for a lot of people it's too intellectual. It doesn't do much. Uh, Just somebody asked a question about confidentiality with children and parents. When we work with children and parents in our protocol, we actually have a signed form of consent that the parents have to sign. And we have them sign it that they understand what we're giving to their children. We also have them have two other separate boxes, one for a picture taking and one for videotaping. And so to me, that's very, very important to have that kind of, we want the parents on board. And this summer we were teaching at Head Start, and a lot of the parents were Spanish speaking, so we had it translated into Spanish. But we have a confidentiality form that we always use with the parents, absolutely. And that's why we want to, if, as much as possible, get the parents involved.
Wait.
The question was about if a child is confiding in you, to what extent do you, can you, should you share that with a parent?
Well, we've got two things here. If we're in an educational setting, and like I've trained Britta, and there's another person, Rosemary, they're bound by certain ethical things. So if a child tells them, that's a whole nother affair. If, like, this child that was sent to me, with her mom, and she said specifically, I would like you to do eye rest with my child because she's part of our community. I asked her to come in at the beginning of our work together so that we could feel like there's an alliance here. And then I asked her to go out of the room, and then I had a little dialogue with her son who's 9, and I said, look, everything you say to me is basically confidential, but maybe not. There may be things here I'd really like to discuss with your mom, and I'll talk with you before I would bring her in, but I want you to understand that, you know, what you're telling me in a certain way is between you and I, but there are things here I may want to need to share with your mom and your dad. So I don't have confidentiality, but I want to try to engender as much of it as I can to support their ability. Like he said, I'm really angry at my mom, and I want him to have enough friendship and trust that he can tell me those kinds of things so that we can then resolve it. And then I asked him, I said, do you mind if I share this with your mom? And he said, no. And so then I bring the mom in, which I did at the end of the session, and we went through the session with her. And I kept checking with him. I'd say, so is what I'm saying accurate? Tell me if I'm saying it any different. And he said, no, you're doing a good job. And so again, I'm trying to tie that thing in. What would happen if we had a parent who was off the wall and reactive? I don't know. Now that's a different situation, but... And, you know, I have told some parents, you know what, I prefer if you would be willing for me not to tell you what happened right now, maybe later, but I'd really love to hold the respect between your child and me for just a little while longer. And if I really feel you need the information, I'd be happy to give it to you. And if you can, don't go home and try to pry it out of him. But they do. Why start on the left side with body sensing? Why not? That's my answer to that one. There is no right or wrong to starting on left or right, as long as we do left and right, because we're doing that kind of left brain, right brain, left side of the body, right side of the body, so we want that integration to be taking place, because we do know left hand, right brain, right hand, left brain. So I just tend to start with the right brain to try to relax this thing that's trying to hold on to the world and create a story and a narrative and trying to understand, whereas the left brain, it's not trying to understand anything. So I start on the left side mainly just for that kind of neurological reason, but there's no reason why we can't start on the right side. They start on the left side in India for other reasons. They don't have toilet paper in India. It's disrespectful to offer a certain hand to your teacher in India.
if you're leading a group session, but you're just doing it with one person, so a yoga nidra session, and you are going through the body and you realize you've kind of missed a body part on one side and you're already on the other side further down, should you try and go back or just go on?
They don't know it.
Right, okay. All right.
And you can always loop back around.
Okay, thank you.
But for the most part, they've got no clue what you're doing. They're just enjoying the ride. And if you miss it in the body sensing, you can pick it up in the breathing. And by having them do alternate side breathing, then you can make that integration again. And then, you know, to save time, you can dovetail the breathing and the body sensing together, so that as your body sensing, they can be breathing. Take a long exhale into your left hand, take a long exhale into your right hand, so we can weave them together.
Mm-hmm. In the feeling sensations mm-hmm. in the body, in a dyad, I found myself both in my body and with the other person. There's sometimes it feels like a predictability of travel. You know, it might start here and going up and ending up. And so I find myself sometimes sort of locking into that roadmap and maybe forgetting the other parts. Or is that a general sort of movement?
Say more.
I just saw that in the dyads that were with me, and sometimes in the dyads
that you were doing,
both
that you were giving,
or in both cases,
okay.
or were giving to me, that there's a sometimes what feels like a fairly predictable route of travel of sensation,
mm-hmm.
starting here, and then if you go back, they say, well, now maybe I feel it in my chest. And I think I saw in myself the tendency to want to make it a predictable route.
Right. And it's not a predictable route.
Yeah.
But that's just the fact. It's not.
And it isn't generally that it goes...
We might say there's a predictable route that always has differences. So like we can feel on the inhalation, there's an inward and downward movement to energy.
Mm-hmm.
And on the exhalation, an upward movement. But there's also the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
And so first, we may want to travel that standard route because the energy is really alive there.
Uh-huh.
And then later on, we can feel the reverse route.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can feel how they're both actually happening simultaneously. And then we realize it's going that way too, and it's going that way too, and it's going that way too, and all of a sudden you realize it's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere already. Mm-hmm. And it blows out the kind of predictability that we had encountered. But at first there are kind of standard routes, and we often see a kind of a standard where people will feel some pressure in their head, and then it will jump to their throat, and then it will jump to their chest, and then it will go into their belly.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no predictability. We still have to always stay in the unknowing. Otherwise, we'll lock in.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like that I feel it's so much in the gut, but and so that I forget all the other extremities. And nobody's saying, do you feel anything in your left toe? Or
right. And that's why if we can give a general, just take a moment and scan your whole body and just see if there are any other, and I've said it in the dyad sometimes, and just take a moment, scan your whole body from your head to your toe, to your fingertips, and just see if there's anything calling your attention anywhere in your body. So we can kind of make a general, you know, orient them to their feet, to their hands,
mm-hmm.
and see, because you're right, they may, a lot of feeling tends to be here,
right.
but we don't want to leave out necessarily the legs.
Mm-hmm.
That little boy I was working with was a good example. When the opposite was called out, I was actually thinking he was going to go here, and he went down into his feet, which was great, and he had this really deep image and feeling in his legs. And I really was sitting there, you know, waiting for something in here.
Yeah, well, I find myself sort of waiting to hear that it's going to be here.
Right.
Yeah. So it's sort of really, you have to So it's that ability to hold a wider
always
awareness.
Right. Always holding the possibility for something different, even though the next 10 people come in, always come in that kind of predictable pattern. We don't want to get locked in. Mm-hmm. And that will cause us problems. Could I just kind of go over the would it be helpful to go over the yoga nidras I did and why I did them? So in level one, I was trying to do a very predictable anamaya, pranamaya, manamaya, vijnanamaya, kosha with the iris. And I was, in a way, kind of repeating that, but I wanted to weave in some of the other practices that we don't always get to in level one and just show you other possibilities. So the first night, I did a progressive relaxation with you with utilizing the 61-point meditation that's in your manual, starting in the mouth and ending in the feet. And because it was the first night, I was thinking of the bottom of that meditation chart, so I wove in the five senses and the five elements. And there are lots of ways of weaving in the elements, but earth, foundation, ground, weight. Stay with the sensation, feel how it's vibrating. It's more energetic, movement, watery. Then it starts to expand, fire. Feels like it's extending out everywhere, touching everything, air, into a greater spaciousness. So I was walking you through the five elements and just doing a little bit of breath noting and then weaving in quality of awareness. So I was just trying to work the bottom rung of the five elements and senses on the map, bring in the progressive relaxation. Because to me, that's one of the first things I like teaching to a group, because many people can't differentiate between tension and relaxation. So we want to give them a differentiation. Then the second one, I wanted to weave in autogenics. So we talked about cool forehead, warm hands, warm feet, heavy arms, heavy legs, sense of relaxed heartbeat and regular breathing, and the heart rate variability. So I brought in the metronome that second night and started helping you find first what's your regular breathing rate and then trying to lengthen the exhalation to start this establishing of a heart rate variability to deepen a plasticity, flexibility, resiliency between the parasympathetic and the sympathetic. Because again, we're not trying to take out the sympathetic, we are trying to get them into a nice balance where they're working together harmoniously. But we do know by bringing in the long exhale, it does deepen the parasympathetic relaxation response. So that's a nice thing we can build in. So I wove autogenics that evening with heart rate variability and the 61-point meditation. And again, weaving in pure awareness. And I really didn't go into the other koshas. I was leaving them at the far end. Although I always give suggestions like, and you might notice if there are any emotions or thoughts that are present, and can you just welcome them in? But I wasn't going into them because I was trying to pay attention to these earlier stages. Then on Tuesday evening, I wanted to increase the heart rate variability, so I did that again with you, but now I brought it into alternate sides of the body breathing. So as you're making a long exhale, I was asking you to go into one side of the mouth, then the other side of the mouth, then the other ear. So I was trying to jump from alternate side of the body to alternate side of the body, which is a very, actually, way of giving a soothing meditation to people and helping integrate the two sides of the body. And so I also gave, again, the 61-point meditation, and I wove in joy and a little bit of the Ashmitamaya, the sense of just noting the I thought. So again, I was trying to do the first two koshas, weave in more heart rate variability, because we know if we give one intervention, that's not enough. We've got to keep repeating it and building. But I wanted to teach alternate sides to the body breathing. I wanted to introduce more of the joy element because I hadn't done that before, and begin to set you up for a potential inquiry that was coming a few days later for noting the I thought and the possibility of seeing it as just another object and a deeper disidentification. And then Kelly came in to bring in the Manomaya Kosha. So she asked you for images and for emotions, their opposites, and weaving in a little bit of the microcosmic orbit, the sense of the breath moving down the front line, moving up the back line. Again, just trying to show you a different way of using the breath. I normally wouldn't be giving that week after week so many changes. I want to build a stability and so people are getting a sense of mastery before we go on to a new technique. But this is a training. There may have been a few other things you wove in that night. I can't remember. Guided imagery, that's right. So she was taking you through using the imagery, some of the imagery that you had given her. Then on Thursday, because we were now coming into more pulling out the Vijnanamaya Kosha, I was trying to weave in beliefs. I was going to do the imagery, but I got carried away with other things and I forgot to pull out images of you. But what I should have done was, okay, what are some beliefs that you're feeling and what are images associated with them, just like Kelly had done, and then weave a patter, a story together. But I was trying to more kind of mine beliefs and thoughts and that element. And then last night, I wanted to bring in the Pointer Sisters and the Brahma Viharas and these essential aspects that I think rise out of our pure awareness. So I was weaving in the Pointer Sisters, and I did a setup for you by giving you an earlier talk through them as a preparation so that when I got to the meditation, I could just dive and go much more quickly. So I was focusing a little bit on body sensing, a little bit of breathing, but I wanted to take more time to go to the Pointer Sisters and these Brahma Viharas, things like love, friendship, gratitude, equanimity, and always weaving in the pure awareness and this sense of the later stages in the Yashmita Maya where it's in your level one manual. When our attention is free and available, and we can feel, in a way, a sense of awareness or our consciousness pervading more, touching. So, in a way, we're touching the elements a little bit again because our consciousness is pervading, it's expanding. That's the fire element. We can feel it. So that's kind of like the earth element, and it's in movement. There's the water again. And now it's pervading and touching. So the pervading is more the fire element, and the touching is the air. It interconnects everything. But I was also asking if you could inquire into feeling how it just doesn't touch, but it kind of pervades. And it empties out, potentially, the solidity of the objects around you. So I asked you to do a differentiation of opposites. I asked you to, in that meditation, to sense the object and then feel, if it's possible, a more translucency of how your own consciousness was interpenetrating, and then come back to the solidity and then feel more the sense of openness, the solidity, the more sense of openness in both simultaneously. Trying to give you a little bit of instruction for the Ashmitamaya Kosha, where we're beginning to feel this interconnected wholeness and non-separation. So that was my madness that I thought in trying to hit some of the different techniques that I have in your manual and show how I might use them. Now, my tendency would be, if I've got a 10-week course in the early stages, to really emphasize the sankalpa, the anamaya, pranamaya. Oh, and that first, the first two that I gave you, I spent more time doing the sankalpa and the heartfelt desire and the inner resource. But if I'm teaching a segment, I'm spending more time early on the anamaya, pranamaya, sankalpa. I want that really in place. I want those early yoga nidras. I want people to go home feeling, what was that? And that soothing, I want it to be more soothing so that they're willing. I want to hook them. So they're willing to come back. And so when I start asking about the manamaya kosha, they're hooked enough. They go, well, I'll weather this one. I just want a little bit more of that other. And so then I can start to weave in the manamaya, the vijnanamaya. And I don't spend much time out there with the ishmitamaya kosha unless I feel I have a receptive audience. I don't think it's fair. The homeless and the military and people in chemical dependency, they're not coming to me to help disrupt their sense of self. I want to work more on the constructive phase of yoga nidra, helping people to feel really sense of solid okayness, friendliness with themselves, some self-healing around self-judgments and things like this. Get enough of that kind of joy going where people feel more contained.
One of the words that you've used as you've gone along is intervention, and I just realized when you used it there, I don't really know what that means in terms of what we're doing.
I think of an intervention as tonight we're going to work with the Pointer Sisters. It's a theme. I wasn't even aware I was using the word intervention. But to me, it's just a theme we're working. So tonight we're going to work with the Manamaya Kosha. So it's a theme, or we could call it an intervention, where we're bringing something new into the room. We're intervening in a way that you might not normally be leading your life. That's the way I was using it. So I do not tend to bring much of the Ashmitamaya Kosha in. Just enough in the sense of weaving in awareness and helping people get a sense of, I'm more than all of this. If that's all I can get going, then I think I've done a very good service, that people are breaking their identification enough so they can be with, on friendly terms, with all the movements in themselves, and have that sense of greater than, and the sense of joy that can begin to liberate. And so as it's starting to liberate, that's when I start to go into the Brahma Viharas and these essential aspects, because we're set up now. There's enough free attention where joy is just wanting to erupt, so then I'm just kind of going with it. So in the middle phase or later phases when I'm teaching a group, I'll start to really weave in joy and these essential aspects. But I am careful not to go into the Ashmitamaya Kosha unless we're on retreat. Because then I know we have a sealed container and you're coming to retreat. You're not going to Club Med. So I figure you're fair game. So we're heading towards conclusion. Any final things that would be helpful? Well, I covered as much as I could. So I'm glad to see so many people interested in continuing on. The one thing that we stressed in level one is, if as a level two practitioner, you can say, I've gotten advanced training in yoga nidra. You cannot say you're a certified yoga nidra teacher. As far as I'm concerned, you can say, I'm teaching I-Rest Yoga Nidra, if you're staying pretty much in the protocol. But if you're going way outside the protocol, and I don't know what that would look like, and you feel like you're deviating, then I would say call us and talk to us so that we can hold a sense of continuity, integrity, so that when somebody calls us up and says, I would like someone who's teaching I-Rest, we can send them to you, and we know that that's basically what you're doing, and therefore the research that we're doing helps keep this sense of integrity in what we're doing. So as more and more research is done, more and more people are saying, I would like to do this methodology of yoga nidra. Where can I find a teacher? Thanks are always accorded to Laura. Where is Laura? For holding our space. And we should thank Yogi Yoga for just really, you know, bringing us in with a warm, enthusiastic welcome. And then we've got our assistants. We've got Sarah and Barbara and of course, William for holding lots of different spaces. Now that you know he's one of the best masseuses around, the secret is out, so he's fair game. Right. Just, we get first dibs on him. And Kelly for holding her space. And Richard for holding his space. And I don't know about you, but this... Barbara. I did. I said Barbara. Yeah, when I said Sarah and I said Barbara, but you didn't hear me. You were all clapping for Sarah. And I don't know about you, but it felt more like I was on retreat this week. And the center holds it very well. It was so nice to get out, wasn't it, for meals and have the space to walk around. So it was a delightful week. It felt like it went really nicely and smoothly. And so I appreciate you all holding the space for one another. That's such a sacred space. So, I hope you'll stay in touch with one another and we grow together as a community and support each other. I guess the last thing I always like to say is we are a 501(c). And actually, we're in this awkward space where we're growing, but we don't have the funds. So we're trying to find, can we get support from you all or anybody that you might know to help us go to the next level, which means we need some funds to release us to hire some additional help to allow me to take a little bit of time off to write, because it's the products that will drive the work we're doing. So if that's appealing to you, we're about to do a fundraising, send out a letter. I hope you'll join us in the coming year. So other than that, thank you. And we'll keep working on our confusions.